Welcome to Always Andersonville, the podcast. I'm Charlie. This week, I am joined by owner Chef Rich Wang and manager X Wang of Andersonville's newest Taiwanese noodle restaurant, Mignoli, opening at 5420 North Clark Street. Inspired by Chef Rich's Taipei childhood, Mignoli embodies the essence of traditional Taiwanese Zhuan Xuan cuisine. Originating from villages built for military dependents, these communities fostered a rich fusion of Chinese flavors. Despite urban renewal erasing these cultural hubs, Mignoli aims to preserve their legacy. From robust Sichuan spices to delicate Shanghai braising, the noodle shop in Chicago offers a taste of Taiwan's diverse culinary heritage, honoring the spirit of Zhuan Xuan culture. Rich, X, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having us.
Yes. So obviously, depending on when this airs, it should be pretty soon. But the Mignoli, I have to tell you, just from walking around the neighborhood, is the most anticipated opening we've got coming right now. So I'm sorry, I don't mean to make the pressure high, but people are very, very excited.
Glad to hear that.
Feel the love.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. So yeah, I mean, obviously, in terms of that anticipation, the other thing is that I know there's great stories behind this restaurant, the concept, the history, just your background. So I'm excited to talk to you about that. I always love to start with a little more background on our guests beyond the intro. So Chef Rich, let's start with you because this really all started in your home neighborhood. Zhuan Xuan, you said, is not a name of the village, but more of a descriptor. Let's get a little history from you.
Sure. Well, thank you again, Charlie, for having us over. So my name is Rich. I was born and grew up in Taiwan. The type of neighborhood I grew up in is called Zhuan Xuan, and that translates to military dependence village. Just to give you a little bit of background on that. So after the Chinese Civil War, there was a lot of Chinese refugees that fled to Taiwan, and the government had to build hundreds of makeshift neighborhoods to house all those people. And they called those neighborhoods Zhuan Xuan. And as you can imagine, those neighborhoods were meant to be provisional and temporary. But as history turned out, you know, everybody just stuck around forever. And my dad was born in one of those. I was born in one of them. And by the late 90s, however, those neighborhoods needed a lot more love and were being torn down because of urban renewal. And so they were kind of going away. And by the time I moved out, I think most of the Zhuan Xuan in Taipei disappeared. They numbered more than 800 when I was young. And right now, there's probably fewer than 80.
Wow.
So as you can imagine, people from all over China lived in a small neighborhood within blocks. And so a lot of fusion, blending of cultures and their cuisines and their languages. And so the food coming out of those Zhuan Xuan is very unique. It's kind of a fusion Chinese cuisine that's only found in Taiwan. And this is the type of food that we want to represent in Mignoli.
Nice. Very, very, very interesting. I mean, I love it. I love it. I love when it comes with this great history, especially since it sounds like the village that you grew up in specifically is a great melting pot of those cultures and of that fusion. It's nice to hear when sort of those communities work out that way and form that way.
And just to add, so Mignoli, the name of our restaurant, is actually the name of the village I grew up in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's no longer there, but I'm honoring the memory.
Well, now it's in Andersonville.
Yes.
Yes. X, what about you? Let's get a little background on your part here.
Yeah. I grew up in LA. I was born in Texas and grew up in LA, technically LA County. I grew up in a small town called Cerritos that is, I think at the time I remember my high school history teacher saying that Cerritos was the fifth most diverse city in the United States. So I definitely grew up in a strong immigrant community. And within that, you know, we also had our Taiwanese American community. I grew up going to Chinese school. There was Channel 18 in LA that was like the international channel. And we had like a slot with TV dramas and concerts and variety shows that we'd watch. So, you know, I didn't have a 100% completely American upbringing. And, my parents were also very active in the Taiwanese American community. weirdly, particularly through line dancing, like country line dancing.
I did not expect to hear that.
Yeah, there's a subculture of Taiwanese American middle to older age folks who are rabid about line dancing, and my parents are at the crux of that.
So can we expect some line dancing events at Mignoli?
No, absolutely not. I have capped out for a lifetime.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll try and convince you. We'll see what happens.
But, you know, also LA is known for the San Gabriel Valley area, the 626, and our grandparents lived in that neighborhood, and we would go and visit that area often as well. And that's a very, like, I think LA area has like a quarter of the total Taiwanese diaspora in the United States. Like, it's a huge community and huge population out there. So, yeah.
So can I ask a little bit about how, and obviously we'll get more into the formation of the concept for Mignoli and everything, but you come from two very different, growing up, two different sides of the world. So I'm curious, you know, how this collaboration, this partnership of the two of you creating this came to be. When did this start?
Well, X and I are actually cousins. So when I first moved to the US when I was 14 years old, I lived in X's parents' house. So we kind of grew up together. Yeah. We knew each other very well. Our parents are brothers. So
we did competitive eating. As teenagers.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Was it a particular food item?
Just with each other also. Oh, okay. This was not a formal event.
I was going to say, there's no YouTube videos of you two competing hardcore.
Coney Island,
no, this is pre YouTube. We are dating ourselves, but.
And I've always wanted to open a Taiwanese restaurant to celebrate Taiwanese food and food I grew up with. And when it came time to open, I was thinking about who might be the perfect person to help me with this project. And at that time, X happened to be available. I reached out to them and perfect match.
That's great to hear. I mean, it's a family project, obviously.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, from the history all the way to now, it's been fully a family project.
Yeah.
When did you both get to Chicago? I mean, you said you came here for culinary school, but why Chicago? Why do you think you ended up here?
I moved here with my family in the year 2000. That was not really my decision. I was 16. You know, my dad got a job here. We ended up here. And culinary school happened later when I was an adult.
But you like Chicago.
Yeah, I grew to love it. I think when I first got here, it was the year we got here, we had 12-inch snow in a matter of 2 days. It was great the first day. It was so beautiful. And then you realize, oh, you have to walk to school in this 12-inch snow.
And this is coming from LA and before that, a semi-tropical island.
One of my favorite things is when I would meet people who just moved here from LA and I'd be like, are you prepared for winter? And they'd be like, yeah, I have my nice puffy coat. I'm like, okay, you're going to need a little bit more than that. And they're not prepared. They're never prepared.
It's the shoes. I'm telling you.
It's the shoes. Yeah. It's the boots you need that you don't even realize. And even in good boots, you'll still fall on the ice. Well, X, what about you in terms of getting to Chicago?
I have had a more circuitous route, but you know, the short answer is I got to Chicago because of Rich. So most recently I was back in Taiwan and I was traveling and also I was taking a woodworking class there and just kind of hanging out and enjoying my time. I needed a break from my sort of previous job working at a nonprofit. I was posting on Instagram and then Rich sent a message that was like, hey, your Chinese got really good. and then he was like, and you're in Taiwan. And you know, obviously I know he's a chef and, you know, grew up there. So I was like, send me recommendations. Tell me where to go eat. And we just sort of reconnected. And then at some point, and, you know, I was actually thinking about moving to Taiwan. And he's like, well, if you're kind of like free floating, why don't you come to Chicago?
You start a restaurant with
me? Yeah, do you want to help me? You want to help me with my restaurant? And I, you know, it's a rare opportunity to get to do our food. And, you know, we're also the gay ones in the family. We're the queer ones. And we talk about, especially in queer community, we talk about chosen family. It's also really cool when your bio family gets to choose each other. Mm. So.
Yeah, it's rare.
It's rare.
Yeah. You kind of get to have two big families.
Yeah.
Well, actually, X, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your background then, too, because I know you've worked in a number of industries. You sent me some info, you know, things like education. You went from education in the bio into metal fabrication. Yeah. It's a very interesting crossover. So I'd love to hear a little bit. It sounds like Rich is who brought you back and brought you into food, but this path of yours and how you got from beginning to here.
Yeah. I, you know, it's funny to say brought me back into food. I feel like I don't know if I was ever in the food world or if I've ever left. I have an amorphous relationship to the food world. It's just, I think food is a huge, it's always been the main connecting factor in our family. Mm-hmm. Somehow everyone in our family, especially this generation, works in food, unbeknownst to each other sometimes. But, So I went to school for art. I studied photography and kind of got disillusioned by the art world. But I've always loved, being very hands-on. I'm kind of a tinkerer. I DIY a lot. I'm a handy person. I have engineer brain for my dad, is what I would call it. And, you know, I also have maybe some of his adventurousness. I wanted to try a lot of different things. So, yeah, I got into metal fabrication and welding and woodworking and, you know, I've always loved making stuff. While I was in Santa Cruz, where I went to school, it's a very food-oriented city also, because a lot of small farms, like the majority of the United States strawberries come from Watsonville, which is like a 15-minute drive south of Santa Cruz. Mm. It's got a very strong local farming presence. I ended up working for a friend who opened up a small cafe called Cafe Del Marret. Shout out,
yeah. We always say shout out if there's something like that.
Go for the scones. They're fantastic. Say hi to Jen.
Hi, Jen.
Yeah. But we did sort of like a California cuisine with an emphasis on, you know, local produce. We did, you know, pressed sandwiches, soups and salads, kind of like that type of fresh fare, and house-made baked goods. And it was a very fun experience. But it felt like a friend project. Like, it felt like we were just having fun and being experimental. I wouldn't say I've ever had a formal or serious maybe restaurant job, but that's not what food is to me anyway, you know. And same thing with this, you know. We're not here to necessarily bring something new and exotic or be tour guides or ambassadors. This is just the food that is in our home.
Yeah.
This is the food that we grew up eating. And we just want to extend that hominess and share, you know, share it and open it up to other folks to feel welcome.
Yeah. And so you talked about it a little bit before, the fusion of Taiwanese cuisine. I'd love to hear some more about the cuisine specifically and how it evolved, or at least your experience with it. And I know, again, we'll talk more about your culinary experience too, but obviously you've had the opportunity to sample a lot of different cuisines and a lot of different cultures. So is there more about Taiwanese cuisine that you could tell us about?
Sure. So I think you can think of Taiwanese cuisine along the line of its geography and immigration history. So broadly speaking, Taiwanese cuisine is largely based in terms of technique on Southern Chinese cooking, specifically a cooking called Fujian cuisine. And built upon that, there's obviously cultures from all over China, including Northern China, which is noodle country, and Western China, which is a lot of halal eating. And as well as Japanese influence, because Taiwan was a colony of Japan for half a century. So I think all of these kind of contribute to how Taiwanese taste. And in terms of palate, I would say it's less spicy than your Northern Chinese cuisine, and probably a little bit more herbal than your Japanese cuisine. So it's kind of the crossroad of Japan, China, and with Southeast Asian ingredients. Mm-hmm. Taiwan is a subtropical island in Southeast Asia.
Growing up in LA, but being a part of a very, you know, like you said, a very strong Taiwanese community.
Yeah.
How would you say your food experience as a part of the Taiwanese community, do you think it evolved in a different way than Rich's did?
Yeah. I mean, for one, you know, my dad has always been a super adventurous eater. So I feel as familiar with LA Mexican food, you know, as I do with certain other cuisines or Vietnamese food. I ate a lot of that growing up as well. At home, we mostly ate Chinese food. And Taiwanese food is something that you know, we went to specific Taiwanese restaurants, like kind of family-owned mom-and-pop shops in our neighborhood because of the Taiwanese community. Occasionally, my dad would make like a oyster vermicelli at home, or I remember that he brought back actually boba, the tapioca pearls, in the early 90s. And it was like the new thing in Taiwan. And we had the first time I had that was in our house. So it was, it's like the mix that you get from Taiwan fusion, but then we're in America. So the fusion, you know, is like multiplied by 100.
Well, that's cool. I mean, I imagine that probably influenced an interesting take on food from your side of things. So chef, and I'm sorry, I love calling you chef. I hope that's okay. I mean, obviously the bear got very big in Chicago recently, and everyone, even in the office now, when we ask if someone will do something, an answer is generally yes, chef. So it's become mainstream. I'm not a chef, but you know. So chef, you've had a very impressive culinary journey from Chicago to Lanzhou and Macau. I mean, this is a broad question because your career is so vast in all these cultures, but how have those experiences influenced your approach to blending Western and Taiwanese cooking at Mignoli? Just because, as you've said, Taiwanese food is already a huge combination of other cultures, and then bringing Western into it in some manner. I mean, has that been difficult? Is it something you feel like you figured out a long time ago, is still experimenting with?
Yeah, so I'm the kind of person who would like to be very prepared when I want to do a project. So having the goal of opening my own Taiwanese restaurant in mind, the first thing I thought of doing is go to culinary school. And I went to Kendall College for culinary school. And Kendall College is a very classic, traditional American style of culinary school, which means that the cooking techniques introduced there, it was primarily French. Mm-hmm. And it is very helpful, even though it is not the same as Taiwanese cooking. But that is the best that I can receive in Chicago, mm-hmm. where I live. And after that, I worked at several restaurants in Chicago just to get my feet wet in the industry. I worked at Boca in Lincoln Park, and I worked at Fat Rice in Logan Square. Mm-hmm. So both of those restaurants are really popular, very busy. So I had a taste of working in a very fast-paced and very rigorous environments, you know, but ultimately I needed to learn more about, you know, the techniques behind Taiwanese cooking. So to do that, I had to go to Asia, and I ended up in Macau, and I was actually in Macau for 3 years. And that was during the pandemic. So I have originally planned to be there for 3 months to stage, and it ended up to be a 3-year experience there.
Gave you a lot of time to cook though, right?
Yes. And it was actually a blessing in disguise because I worked at every station at the restaurant I was at. I worked at Wing Lei Palace in Wing Palace in Macau. Every single station, from wok, from barbecue, from dessert, from prep, from fish, you know, you name it, I've worked it. So I think that gave me a very good foundation behind the techniques, you know, that Taiwanese cooking or Chinese cooking in general use. And to talk about Lanzhou, I also went to Lanzhou to learn hand pull noodle. So you probably heard of the city Lanzhou. It's vastly famous for their hand pull noodle. If you go to China, if you go to a noodle restaurant of any significance, the chef learned it from Lanzhou. So I went there, kind of had a noodle making boot camp. We were there in the middle of winter, no heat in the building. We were wearing down jacket, doing hand pull noodle 8 hours a day, 7 days a week for a month straight in order to pass a certification exam at the end of the month. It took me twice to pass the exam. It's not an easy one.
I mean, I imagine it's not easy even if you're not wearing a down coat at the counter trying to hand pull noodles.
Yeah, it was pretty intense, but it really gave me a very, it made me very comfortable working with dough and noodles in general. So at Mignoli, while we are not hand pulling noodle because we just don't have that kind of labor here, we are making all our noodle in-house. So I think with the understanding that I got learned from Lanzhou, I wish to bring that knowledge and technique to Chicago.
Very cool. You know, in the conversations we've had before, I can say just meeting you both and talking to you both, this is clearly a very, you know, passionate family and collaboration. And you know, that's part of what we love in Andersonville is, you know, the community is very important. And this already feels very much like a community oriented endeavor. But on that note, actually, I did want to ask you about, like, you, I like that you said you don't, you're not here to be tour guides. You're not here to, mm-hmm. you know, you're here to bring what you love to just people and share it with people. But do you see, you know, Mignoli as an opportunity to become a destination for some genuine Taiwanese cuisine, especially with the training and where you come from?
Yeah, I think the goal to open Mignoli was to bring our childhood favorites to Chicago and also reviving a kind of a disappearing culture, namely Zhenzun culture. So I think to that extent, I would love for Mignoli to be the center of, you know, where people come and try out unique Taiwanese food items. But I think in the long run, I think I kind of want Mignoli to be the kind of mom and pop's shop that I grew up with in Taiwan. I want people to feel that this is just a noodle shop I want to pop in on a Sunday morning, you know, rather than a specific, you know, exploration or adventure to try Taiwanese food. I just want to be the neighborhood joint.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the goal for Mignoli.
And this is a first for Andersonville. I think that's part of why people are very excited is we haven't had something like this in a long time.
I feel like what we're bringing to Chicago is actually bringing people in. Like, we want to bring them into our home. And there might be new flavors or textures or aromas. But, you know, like any home, you know, people do things their own way. And I think the more time you spend there, the more you realize how welcoming and how warm and how livable it is. Because this culture and Taiwanese cuisine is a living culture. It's a living cuisine. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not trying to present something kind of like stuck in an authentic framework or trap or whatever. It continues to evolve and it continues to live through the people.
Yeah.
And food-wise, I feel like I'm also not trying to be the Escoffier of Taiwanese food. I don't pretend that I can represent, you know, the culture at all. The only thing I can represent is what I believe to be delicious and the memories and, you know, of my childhood.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like very much Mignoli is the place where you go where you're not going to get the Taiwanese cuisine anywhere else the way you get it at Mignoli. It's very much personal
to you. It is a personal cuisine that happens to be Taiwanese.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You know, you talked about sort of the culture disappearing a little bit, especially Zhuan Xun culture. I'm curious, I always like asking people in their various industries, you know, about things that have popped up or misconceptions of the culture or of, especially in cuisine, you know, people make jokes about how you order a particular cuisine and it's not really authentic, you know, an authentic version of that cuisine. It's the sort of Americanized version. And I'm curious if there's anything that you feel has popped up that is maybe a misconception about Taiwanese cuisine or something that has become, air quotes, mainstream that is not, doesn't represent the culture the way you would like it to.
I think fortunately or unfortunately, Taiwanese cuisine is not very well known and popular in the US yet. Mm-hmm. And so there hasn't really been an opportunity for a formation of such misconception as far as I.
But also I would say that even in Taiwan, the concept of Taiwanese cuisine is something that's relatively new that people are still trying to forge and figure out.
So actually in Taiwan, so if you ask people what is Taiwanese cuisine, it's kind of like in America, you ask people what is American cuisine?
Yeah.
The answer is usually different and long-winded and comes back to the city you're in, the kind of household you grew up in.
Right.
And that is very much the same in Taiwan because it is an immigrant-based community.
Yeah. Interesting.
And I think Taiwanese cuisine is still changing. Yeah. And in terms of what you were saying about misconception in America, actually, America had a big role in the formation of contemporary Taiwanese cuisine. Mm-hmm. For example, one of the dishes we have in the restaurant, it's called niu rou mian, which translates to beef noodle soup. That is kind of the most standout famous dish in Zhenzun cuisine. Overall. So the components of that is noodle, beef, and very good bone stock. And Taiwanese people did not eat beef before. Mm. We started eating beef after the Korean War when, you know, the US used Taiwan as a military base and brought in a lot of food for American soldiers. And Taiwanese also didn't eat a lot of wheat noodles before the arrival of Americans. We ate primarily rice noodles like the rest of Southeast Asia.
Right.
So I think the ingredients wise, you know, the U.S. had a huge influence over what we eat in Taiwan nowadays.
Yeah, but yeah. Kind of, I mean, we talked about Taiwan kind of being a melting pot of cultures, and it's cool to hear that it was sort of incorporated in a way where it wasn't, you know, forced upon. It was just these things became available, and now it's been incorporated into the cuisine.
Yes, and I think oftentimes it's not sexy to talk about that history because, you know, the history behind it is often painful.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I think the food is it's the saving grace. It's what's delicious about it. That's what's great about it. And I think the point of, you know, reviving a Zhenchun cuisine is, you know, Zhenchun, it was pretty rough, torn down neighborhood that, you know, I'm glad that people are moving into better housings nowadays, but I would like to preserve the food.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the short, like, historical perspective is within a lifetime, like within my dad's lifetime, even, Taiwan has experienced, in addition to its indigenous population, colonization from Japan, authoritarianism, and then becoming a democracy. So that's within the span of, you know, 60, 70 some odd years.
Yeah.
That's a very short time with a lot of huge political and also social changes.
Yeah. And I mean, that's going to have an effect on all aspects of the culture.
Right.
Wow. That is an extremely short amount of time to go through so many different political systems, too. I have I have political system whiplash here.
Yeah.
Well, great. I mean, I'm excited to see, you know, I'm excited that you're coming in with this sort of just home, like you said, mom and pop community oriented aspect of it, as opposed to trying to be the speakers, the representatives of Taiwanese cuisine. It's not what it's about. Chef Wang, Chef Rich, whichever you prefer. I'm going to put chef in there no matter what.
Both work.
I'm curious because with your background with Michelin star restaurants, and you've commented sort of about your experience working at places like Fat Rice and then even just the learning pulled noodles in Lanzhou. Michelin star restaurants, we imagine, you know, come with high culinary standards and, you know, very, at least from how I think it's been portrayed in the media for, you know, like mass media is a very, very, or like, very frenetic, chaotic, organized, very busy, but, you know, a lot of protocol. And sometimes a mom and pop restaurant doesn't represent that the same way. You know, there's obviously protocol and there's organization, but you do things the way you do things. You change a recipe just a little bit this way because you feel like it. Mm-hmm. How is blending your, you know, your high culinary and Michelin experience into Mignoli? Like, I mean, taking that experience you have and that training you have and translating it to a mom and pop restaurant?
For me, I think ultimately restaurants is about the food that you serve to people and the way you serve it. And to achieve that, I think a mom and pop restaurant and a Michelin star restaurant go through similar struggles. And I don't see a distinction in that in terms of the food that we're going to serve you. Mm-hmm. However, I do think that having worked in those Michelin-starred restaurants, I think the kind of rigor and the kind of ethos and work ethics that you get from those intense work environment is helpful and impactful in the way I look at things and the way I work now. So, you know, the way we treat ingredients, the way we, you know, follow a recipe, you know, the way we do cleaning in our kitchen, you know, all those things might not directly translate to the flavor of your food, but I do think that it accumulates and adds up to something that translates to a good experience. Now, Mignoli, we're not trying to be a fine dining Michelin-starred restaurant.
Yeah.
It is a very homey feel that we're trying to present here. However, we do want to have the kind of warm and welcoming service that is typical of Taiwanese restaurants and Taiwanese people in general.
Yeah. I feel like some people joke about it, but the phrase that your meal was cooked with love, it is the sort of thing you can taste in the food.
Yes.
So, I mean, it seems like you're definitely coming in with that attitude too. Mm-hmm. X, I also wanted to ask you then from the non-food side of with your background, and, you know, this is something we see a lot, like especially these days with our generation, in terms of we have all worked in a lot of industries. We've worked a lot of different jobs, and that forces us to learn to be organized and, you know, how to manage any type of different situation or different industry. And you know, you as the general manager, you're coming in, you know, I imagine more from like the running on the administrative side of things. Has coming into starting a business, starting a restaurant, have you found that to be a challenge, or all the experience from these industries you've worked in have contributed to just jumping into this?
Yeah. I mean, my to-do list game is really strong and, you know, there's challenges in all fields. So, you know, a short list of the things that I did: photography. I taught photography. I was a farmer's market manager along with working at that cafe in Santa Cruz. And then I got into metal fabrication. I've been a studio art, like studio manager. And then most recently a facilities manager. I've also done construction and home renovation, all sorts of stuff. And the through line is you have to be organized in every single one of those fields to be successful and to do a good job. I don't think that this is different. I mean, I'm definitely feeling like maybe I have more experience on the material end of things, but I am very excited and love meeting people. I would call myself a friendly and social introvert. But yeah, you know, right now, mostly we're just dealing with vendors and trying to set things up and trying to be as prepared as possible. But we will be hiring soon and looking forward to engaging with people more, both with the staff and also with our customers that come in, our guests. That's the fun part of it, is getting to feed people, getting to share stories, getting to hear stories from other people, and becoming part of the neighborhood.
Well, I mean, Andersonville is ready to engage with you for sure. There a lot of people want to hear the stories and come sample the food. Can I ask why Andersonville?
Well, I think part of it is Andersonville is available.
Yes, but that is a good part of it. That is a part of
that is one part of it. And that is, you know, just the reality of all things. However, I do think that Andersonville is actually a great fit for Mignoli.
Yeah.
Because if you look down the drag of Clark Street, it is full of mom and pop shops. And it's the kind of place I feel that we are in good company, that we can fit right in. We feel at home here. And Andersonville as a community is very open-minded and very adventurous and supportive of small businesses like the one that we're trying to start right now. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a great neighborhood for me.
Yeah, we definitely have been feeling the support. I mean, you called it pressure, but it just, it feels like love. It feels like an anticipation and it feels very welcoming.
Awesome. I mean, I always love to hear that. You know, we try and make sure Andersonville, you know, I think the community definitely comes out and shows their support for the small businesses every time we can get one in. Well, so then I want to ask, can we get a sneak peek at any of the, or I guess a sneak listen? Sorry, I forget sometimes our listeners can't see what's going on. Not that you have all the food we're here with you right now. At some of your favorite dishes on the menu, if you want to, I don't know, if you don't want to spoil anything, that's fine. But some favorite dishes and maybe the stories behind them.
Why, sure. So I think one of my favorites on the menu is definitely the beef noodle soup, namely
that's the Neuronia. Style.
You mentioned that earlier. I'm so excited. Yeah.
And you can see a picture of that on our Instagram right now, at mignoli.chicago, by the way. So the, you know, it's a pretty, in terms of elements, pretty simple food. It is very good stock and very good meat and very good noodles. So we're trying to approach it as trying to treat the elements very seriously, do every part of it the best way we can. We're making very good bone stock. We're making noodles in-house. We are braising our meat to perfection. So, you know, what we want to bring you is just a umami bomb.
Yeah. That's the best
thing. You know, you're going to get a lot of umami flavor out of it. And I can't wait to share that with Andersonville. And, you know, another dish or category of food that we serve there is called luwei, L-U-W-E-I. Mm-hmm. It's roughly translated to braised snacks. So
I love snacks.
Everything love snacks. Braised. So, you know, you can imagine if you have a very herbal and aromatic and umami filled stock, master stock, and then you braise whatever you want to braise in it, you know.
Veggies, tofu, meats, everything.
Tendons,
eggs. You know. All the stuff. Yeah. I would call it an umami hug, because it's more, it's like you're not gonna get punched in the face. It's like a, especially the beef noodle soup, it's just super tender, really buttery textures with like a nice chewy noodle. We call it Q in Taiwanese. It's al dente for the noodles, and then just the broth is like a good bone broth. It's not you know, it's not watery. It's got a viscousness. It's got a,
it's
like,
going to linger in, on your palate.
Exactly. Yeah.
We might have to stop talking about food because I haven't eaten yet today. And this is torture. When are you opening again? I guess we'll talk about that too. But, can't believe I didn't think of this earlier, but I have to ask about your mascot.
Oh, Minyo Cat.
Minyo Mom. Please tell us. I mean, that's one of my favorite things. I mean, my Instagram is almost entirely my cat. So if there's a cat involved with an Instagram or branding or anything, I'm totally in. But please tell me about Minyo Cat.
So cats is actually a mainstay in Zhentun in Taiwan. And if you walk into a Zhentun when I was a child, it's really cats everywhere.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it is from a lack of management, but it reminds me of home. Like when I walk into my neighborhood, I hear the cat meow, I know I'm home. So that's kind of, you know, just kind of the background of the neighborhood at large.
Small trivia bit. Taiwan is where the first cat cafe started.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
I was about to say, you talk about it just kind of being about management. And now we have cat cafes that open every down every block. And everyone's like, we have to go to
the
cat cafe.
Well, they had the supply. So they, you know, they had to figure out a business model for it. Yeah.
Well, now we see all these different restaurants or cafes bringing in various cute animals that you can come see when you enjoy your coffee. And it's definitely becoming a trend now. But I will always enjoy a cat cafe.
Yeah. Can we are not a cat noodle shop.
I was going to say, is that maybe a future endeavor for Mignoli?
It might be a FDA violation. you know, we love animals and we cannot have them in our food preparation space. So we have them in spirit via Minyo Cat, who's our little mascot buddy.
Minyo Cat is great. I hope we feature a lot of Minyo Cat in the future.
Yes.
Rich X, thank you so much for talking with me today. This has been great.
Yeah.
So before we go, just where can people find you? You know, socials, website, anywhere that's a good place to get some more info, stay updated on some info from Mignoli.
Right now, the best place is our Instagram at mignoli.chicago.
Great.
And we plan to launch our website and our menu in a couple weeks. Or by the time this airs.
Yes.
Look for the menu. If it's not up, it'll be up there soon. And I'll keep an eye on the Chamber newsletter and Instagram and everything, because we'll talk about, you know, the grand opening of Mignoli, and we'll have a ribbon cutting, of course, and get some info out there from when people can start lining up to try this beef noodle soup.
And we have a patio space out in the back. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when the weather warms up, which is soon, I hope.
Oh, gosh. Do we even know anymore? It's snowing out today, and then next week it's going to be 70 degrees or something.
I'm new to Chicago, but I saw like a meme going around about how Chicago has like 9 seasons.
Yep, that goes around every single
half
year.
Half of them are like fake winter or fake summer, fake spring.
There's the false spring, like slush season. And
yeah,
that's a very popular meme. But they do say we deal with the winters because the summers in Chicago are amazing. So...
And once it gets to the sunny season on our patio, it would be a great place to try our house-made ice cream.
Oh my gosh, this just keeps getting better and better. Okay, very excited now. Not that I don't eat ice cream in the middle of negative 60 degree polar vortex weather, but in Chicago, but
Well, amazing. You can do that in the dining room in the future.
Great, awesome.
Yeah,
perfect.
We'll still have that open, of course.
Well, Rich X, thank you again for joining me. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Likewise.
Thank you.